everyone, and welcome to the DevMar Debugged podcast, where experts from top companies all over the world share their insights on everything developer marketing. Milica is now the product marketing manager at Nuvo. At the time of this recording, she worked for AppSignal. Today, we're joined by Milica Maksimović, product and growth marketing manager at AppSignal. So hi, Milica. Great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And in this episode, we're going to be talking about how people can figure out the right developer audience for you, which I know it's a hot topic. But before we actually dive into that, would you mind telling us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
As you said, my name is Milica and I come from Serbia. I'm a big supporter of remote work and I've been working like this since 2000, I want to say 16, like it was mostly always flexible. One thing that's interesting about me is that my background is in English language and literature. So I first studied Shakespeare and then I learned how Linux works. Because I then switched into technical content marketing. That was kind of my starting role. Like I started fixing blog posts and then learning about tech at the same time and then about content marketing at the same time. And that's kind of how I started. And from there, I just kind of fell in love working with products for developers that were built by developers that are kind of difficult to understand, difficult to explain to people, where you needed to invest a lot of time into like figuring out what the valuable things are and kind of translating the values of the product into a human readable language, I can say. I've been always kind of in marketing roles since then, technical companies, and I'm currently working for AppSignal, as you mentioned, which is like, if I try to explain it to people, I usually say, think about diagnostics for cars. Like, you know, when you take your car to a car mechanic, the mechanic tells you, okay, this is what happened with your car. This is what the system is kind of telling us. And AppSignal kind of has an APM, and which stands for Application Performance Monitoring. So it kind of tells you what errors you have in your application, where the performance bottlenecks are, how it tells you what your hosts are doing, how they're doing. There's also logging. So it's a big app that helps basically developers figure out like how things are working and why things aren't working.
Yeah, that's great. It's was it difficult then to transition from, you know, English to complete a new technical field?
Yes, it was definitely the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And I just got immersed into this world and I couldn't do it without my colleagues. Like I have to be very honest, I was lucky that I worked in a company where I was working directly with developers. So they were always there to answer a gazillion of my stupid questions, air quote marks. But it was like I had a lot of help from them. And then I actually read a lot of books about their world, like a bunch of O'Reilly editions on anything and everything. I think the one book that I would recommend anyone jumping or thinking into jumping into this world is the DevOps Handbook. If you can find it, read it, buy it. If you figure stuff out from it, then yes, please do come over and do developer marketing. If you're like, I don't understand what's going on here, don't even try it. Because it's like this field is very rewarding. It's very exciting. It's very dynamic, but it's also, you know, requires you to push your skills. You need to constantly grow and to be aware that like, okay, I'm very good at marketing, but I'm not a developer. So you need to invest a lot of time into trying to understand their days, the scope of their work, the responsibilities different developers have, to be able to understand to whom to say what and how. Mm. If that makes sense.
No, it does. And there's so many, the tech is always changing, the field is always changing. So you have to keep up with marketing, but you also have to keep up with tech. So I imagine that's not very, very easy.
On average, if you're working for a company that's very focused on front-end developers or designers, expect major changes every 6 months. I'm not joking, like 6 months to a year, there's always a big new framework. There's always something coming. The previous framework that was working just fine suddenly doesn't work just fine. Like I was present when Angular was the best thing ever, and then you couldn't upgrade to the second, like the later version, which is kind of when React came in. But like, it's just a very, very dynamic field. Like backend stuff is like still moving pretty fast, but not as fast. And yeah, you constantly need to be subscribed to their newsletters, be in their, you know, groups, and just listen to your colleagues, talk to your colleagues. You have to be there. If you get yourself isolated from that environment, you are not going to succeed, basically, in your job.
Yeah. No, and listening from the developers themselves is massive help because, you know, they know everything about it. So that could be a huge, huge help. But there's also many different types of developers. So not just one. So your company, you know, you have some, and then everyone has like so many different. And I feel like with the number of developers growing every year, the tech is always changing. Like we'll have more and more, I suppose. So are there any distinct perhaps personas or profiles, you know, overall that marketers should be aware of?
Yeah, and I'd say depends on the type of product you're working on. Like you need to be very aware of like the type of user that you have. For example, in my case, I don't need to cover every single language in the world. Like when you say a developer, it's like technically a person that can write code. But which code? So you can separate them by the language they're using. For example, the biggest, of course, you know, let's say split is front-end developers, back-end developers, full-stack developers. Like, so are they playing with the database essentially, or they are not? Front-end developers maintain what, like, I'd say the visual aspect of our application, and the back-end developers handle all the invisible work. Basically that the app is doing, and you need to figure out, if it's a front-end developer, what are their like responsibilities? Are they a mid-year or a senior? Are they kind of a lead maybe in their team? Like what level of or scope of responsibilities they have? The same goes for a back-end engineer. There's also like, do you need to target leads? Do you need to target seniors? How does your app get into teams? Like those are the questions that people need to kind of have answered to be able to move forward. Like you can differentiate developers by many ways. For me, the best way is to understand the tech that they're using and their job position. Like what are their main responsibilities, kind of.
All right. So yeah, that's a very interesting perspective. Not heard anyone say it like that. So.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. No, I like that. Yeah, for sure. And is that perhaps what makes it so hard for people to kind of find the right audience? There's so many elements to consider, and then how to narrow it down.
I'd say that's the biggest mistake, because like people, when you have a product, when you have a tool that's used by developers, you're going to be like, okay, now I'm going to write this amazing content, right? The first thing that marketers, I think, need to be aware of is that they shouldn't write content they cannot comprehend fully. If I can write something without my calling checking up on it, it's most likely shit. So don't do it. You need to collaborate with people. Like I've written a lot of posts in collaboration with my colleagues. Like they give me the technical gist, and then I add stuff around it. There's always like people kind of start wide, like we're selling to developers without asking themselves who, which ones, like are they. I'm always for being very niche, like try to do niche stuff, because that's how you see the best results. I think you can probe different communities in different ways. Like if you're targeting front-end developers, try finding a front-end developer from the team that can write about the application you are working on, to write about the product in a certain way, and just kind of present that to the rest of the front-end community. Share that, like find out where those people are, share your content there. A lot of people are focused, I think, on content production, not on distributing that content where they should. And like, I think it's called top of the funnel, but I kind of have a theory that there's like three levels of top of the funnel. The first part is like anything that would be of interest to a developer. For example, Git. Most of them use Git as their version control system. So if you have a blog post about Git, you can with confidence say this post is going to get read by thousands and thousands of developers. But can you actually, should you present your product to your those people? Can they benefit from your product? The second layer, which I call like kind of like the true awareness, is like when you start answering the problems that they have before or during using your application. Like if I can speak from the perspective of AppSignal, they are fighting bugs, they are fighting errors, they are worried about performance, stuff is lagging. That's why we write a lot about performance and how to fix your performance. And the best way to do it is like tell them how to fix it. Don't force them to use your product. Showcase how it is easy to figure stuff out while using your product, but don't force them. Like don't write blog posts that require people to sign up for your product. Like that's too deep. So kind of balance, like one thing, someone may argue, yeah, but like the Git post is going to help you raise your brand awareness, which, you know, brings nice numbers. I'm all about the reality of next steps. What are people going to do once they see a blog post? What are people going to do after they visit a certain page on your website? Kind of try to be honest with yourself and say, so what is my job? Is my job to raise awareness about this product to developers? Yes. Who are those people and how can I target them better instead of, you know, writing junior topics? I know for a fact that the type of product that I work on is used by seniors, is introduced by senior developers. So I can write about a junior topic and get thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of developers reading it about it. They're not going to use our product because they are not there yet. So like being real about who your users are, understanding them and helping them solve the problems that they have at work while they may be using your product or may not be using your product, but, you know, kind of figuring, like I call it pillar content, like try to find the pillars of your product. Like what are the things, what's the foundation of your product? What are the problems that you are solving? And then write as much as you can about those problems. Or if we step us, like I'm talking again a lot about the website, but like be on conferences that they, you know, sponsor the right conference. Like don't just sponsor any conference or like target the biggest one. Go to a small one and test stuff. You know, figure out what people react to the best. You know, try to make yourself memorable, original. And just, you know, you need to test a lot of stuff and you need to be where developers basically are.
No, absolutely. And I like what you were saying about, okay, it's easy in a way to kind of get thousands of views on a piece of content, but if it doesn't have any purpose beyond that, then you're kind of going to lose that audience anyway. So I find that perhaps with marketers, the difficulty is balancing, okay, I've got SEO, I've got to think about all that, but now that they're there, then what next? So just keeping that journey in mind. So
yeah. I'd say like long tail stuff. Focus on long tail keywords. Focus on the problems you're solving, because like SEO, yes, you want to, you know, make sure that your tool stands out among other tools that are in the market. Really depends, like if it's a green field, right, or not. But, you know, you just need to ask yourself, how do people start using our product? Where did they hear about us? How can I get more of these people on our website, essentially?
Yeah, definitely. And we've already touched on that, you know, kind of like the process of discovering the right audience, you know. Talking specifically perhaps about, you know, SaaS products, as I know that's something in your wheelhouse. So is there any tips, anything you want people to consider when they're trying to figure out the right audience for them?
Yes. The first thing, like when we talk about developer marketing and when we talk about product marketing, you really need to be best friends with the product manager or product developers. Mm-hmm. You really need to talk to them. You need to be in touch with them because they also know, they understand the pain points they are trying to solve. Then you have customer success. Customer success is going to tell you, hey, the majority of our customers are these types of companies. Like, you know, ask people if there's something that's kind of bonding all of those people. And if I can use the frame, like, I don't know, I'm not sure if you're familiar with like jobs to be done. I really like that framework. Yeah. Like the example they used is like, yeah, people were trying to figure out like what to eat for breakfast. So like, which job and like what job is a milkshake solving for you? It's like, yeah, I'm driving and I need to eat. What can I eat that, you know, doesn't make that much of a mess in the car? The same thing, like you need to understand, like you need to talk to product people to figure out what jobs your product is basically solving. Another best thing you can do is actually get on a call with a customer and talk to them and ask them a bunch of stuff. So like I have some questions that I usually ask. So when I'm on a call with a customer, I usually want to be able to identify the type of company they are. So are they a B2B company or are they a B2C company? Are they maybe building apps for someone else? Like what type of shop is using us? So I usually ask them to tell me like to whom ever I'm talking, like to tell me a bit more about the company and their role. Then I want to know how many people are in their team. And I want to know how many of those people are actively using our product, because that's kind of helping you understand who's kind of involved in making the decision or who's pushing within the team to bring in the type of product that you kind of have. Yeah. And then I want to know what their workflow looks like. A lot of people are like, we want to raise engagement in our app. God forbid, like that's something I don't want to work in my app, because that means that all of our users have a lot of errors, have a lot of troubles with their apps. And like, we are sad to see that basically, like if the whole company is in our app, something's going wrong, like something's really bad. So you need to be focused on the right metrics, like try to understand what their workflow looks like. Or what are the moments in the onboarding that are a good indicator that they're going to stay? Or like try to understand what are the things that they're doing that might get them to drop off. Like that's another thing where you need customer success, basically customer support to help you out. Then I kind of want to know what technologies they use besides our tool, or if they maybe use some other competitor, because this is where the gold mine is. If you know the technologies they're using, like whether it's a programming language, whether it's a method, whether it's some random tool, write about that tool, because for every customer you interview, there's 100 others that are pretty much in the same spot that have a similar company that you can attract. So try to get your users to talk about their stack. Developers are usually very happy to talk about their stack. So try to then implement that into your content marketing strategy. Like if you have a person that's in charge of that, tell them, hey, these are the tools. This is what's really exciting for our customers. Maybe we should, you know, we can do something with that. Then the second part that I kind of ask, which is kind of maybe coinciding with like jobs to be done, is like what challenges influenced you to look for a solution? Did you maybe use something else previously? And then the most marketing part is like, so how did you search for a solution to your problem? Like, and for them, I just need to understand, like, were they the only ones? Are there more people involved in this process? Because what if developers are experiencing the pain point, but the final say has to be with, I don't know, a product owner? And then you have to be like, okay, oof, what does this person want to know? And then there's usually a very business, like there's this business aspect of, so when was this tool made? If I add it to our tool chain, tool belt, like, or if we implement it into our stack, is it here to stay? Because I don't want to solve this problem ever again. This is why, like, when you work with bigger teams, and you, when you work with product owners or product managers, you usually get more of these types of things that you have to answer. And they are probably the people you want to write case studies for, such as why this company is now running a very successful business because they are using us and stuff like that. And there's usually a ton of checklists you need to figure out. They're like, so are you compliant with this or that? Because we are GDPR compliant. And unless you are GDPR compliant, we can't be GDPR compliant, and all sorts of things. So you need to understand the personas that you have. You need to understand who the end user is. You need to, but you also need to understand who needs to implement that tool, like who needs to be pinged to get your tool into the, that company. For example, I don't know, let's use the example of Intercom. You cannot implement Intercom unless you have a front-end developer implementing it into your tool. But is a front-end designer, a front-end developer, the person that, you know, making the decision? Nope, they just, they have been given a task. So you need to understand who's being given a task, who's making the final decision. Is it a joint thing? And what type of companies do you fit in the easiest? Because sometimes you want to ask yourself, okay, what type of tool do I have? And what type of companies do I want to work with? Because there's, for example, if you are targeting enterprise, then yes, certifications, compliance, security, that single sign-on, like there are features that are being explicitly required by enterprise customers. Like those are the things you need to have. So you can't just say yes to the product person who suggested you should go for enterprise without like understanding that, like, hey, these people are going to have a huge checklist for us. And then like you're failing. Why are you failing? Because you cannot, like the product does not fit in with their expectations. That's where you need to be like, hey, okay, this is what I have. Like that's where you need to understand the product, but that's why you also need to understand the market to be able to like say, this is the person that's going to be excited about this tool, or this is the person that's not going to be excited about this tool. And then I also want to know stuff like, how did you hear about our tool? Where do you usually hang out? Did your work plan in any way evolve over time? That type of stuff. Then there's like benefits, the section that I think, you know, like what results did you want to achieve? What did you achieve? Are you saving? Like what are the key results? That type of stuff. And I usually ask like, so when you look for a new tool, where do you usually look? Like, do you ask for recommendations for anyone? Friends, colleagues, an online forum? Like, you need to understand how their searching process goes. You need to understand, again, how they and to whom do they go to when they need this type of information. So you can figure out maybe like you need an affiliate program, for example, if they're looking for consultants who can maybe bring into in a tool that can help them and that type of stuff. So those are usually like specific questions that I ask to figure out to better understand who the users are. And as soon as you have like 15, 20 interviews, you're going to have a mental model already of the companies that are really happy with you, where you really work well. And then you're also kind of going to have a mental model of like, oof, maybe these companies are the types of companies we want to work for, but we're not there yet.
Oh, that's such good advice. Lots of like practical things that people can implement as well in their own companies. So thank you for that. And just circling back to what you were saying now about Okay, so you have sometimes developers are the ones choosing, sometimes they're not, you know, sometimes it's someone else has to make the decision about a tool or something. You also mentioned sometimes it can be both. So I'm just curious if you want to expand a little bit on that, just on how then would you balance that of, okay, trying to target the developer, but also the decision maker who may not be as technical as the developer. You mentioned, you know, case studies, for example.
You need to have things on your website that can answer both. From my experience, the way developers buy, they test without reaching out once to customer success, customer support. So the first thing is that you need to have a good, clear, easy to understand website. You need to have very nice categories. And as soon as you have a product owner, or a project manager or a tech lead, they are usually being approached by someone else and they're like, hey, this is the checklist. Because as I said, for example, GDPR, it's the easiest. We're in Europe. So you need to be GDPR compliant in order for you to enable others who are also GDPR compliant to stay GDPR compliant. So that's maybe something that people from the US don't know. In order to be GDPR compliant, every single vendor you're working with needs to have that GDPR, also needs to be GDPR compliant. So it's kind of like a chain reaction.
Yeah.
And it's mandatory. So every company in Europe is going to make need to see that you have, yes, I'm GDPR compliant somewhere on your website. So talk to those people, figure out what their checklists look like, and make sure you have that information on your website, whether you need a separate security page, whether you're going to address that through documentation. But you need to have you need to have their businessy questions answered. Case studies, yes, I'm a big fan of case studies because you grow internal knowledge, but you also get to find the edge cases, or you're like, hey, this is a really nice example of an ideal customer that's using this thing in a perfect way. Because in another thing that it took me a long time to realize that the most expert user of your product is your product team. Users aren't always going to be experts, and they're just going to use one set of features and not the other. So you sometimes, even for existing customers, need to talk to them about hey, but we also have these other features and you can use them this way, and this is how it can help you save time. Basically, try to give them numbers. I have some case studies where I'm like, so we solved the problem for a customer. We helped actually a customer solve a problem. And for example, we have a yearly subscription. So he paid our yearly subscription to our plan. And within the first month, he managed to save as much just because he saved money on hosts. He figured out what performance stuff was lagging. So instead of understanding that performance can be fixed, he was just adding hosts. And then he was like, oh, wait, so for me, I don't need, because they were scaling. So for him, it was natural that things are growing. So are my expenses. And then he figured out, but wait, this is a performance issue. So when he solved that, then he was able to write off $1,000 or more dollars in host costs per month. So that's an example of a thing why you want to have this tool. And with those things, you can actually, the people who are kind of pushing for your product, for example, developers, then they get something to talk about with their project managers, with team leads, to be like, hey, we can actually help the whole business by installing this thing, and then we can maybe pay less for something else. Or we can do things faster, or then we don't have to maintain. So you always need to understand what are the pain points, what are the problems, and how the tool can solve those problems, but kind of in a shape of a case study. Either that, or you can have comparison pages competitors with some checklists, or why are we cheaper but better? So there's like example that we use is like Absignal is a bootstrapped company, so there's no venture capital at all, which also means we don't have to be crazy expensive because we are profitable and we are not worrying about shareholders getting even more money. So, you know, we can be affordable. And when you say things that way, people test us out and they're like, oh, wow, how do you have all these features? And you're such a small team. And then we're like, yes, we're just efficient, you know, and, you know, we've only done things that pay off, that people responded to the best. And, you know, you end up with having a good product. I don't think like the biggest challenge of working with developers and on products for developers is that like developers need you to work. If they complain, that's bad enough. They drop off easily and they don't talk to you. Like they want you to get out of their way. So if you don't have a good product, if you don't have strong retention rates, it's like maybe you aren't doing your job that great, or like you're not targeting the right people, or the product isn't where it should be. Because if you have a happy developer, they're like, you really need to be very bad for them to be like, okay, after X years, I'm leaving.
Right. Well, thank you for that as well. That's a lot of good practical examples again. And I'm also curious about like, because developers are such a difficult from what I've spoken to people and what they say, like a tough nut to crack, you know, a little bit different from other audiences. Do you have to have dedicated people just on hand to answer all their questions? You know, like you mentioned customer support. Are those people, you know, do they have technical background or technical knowledge that they have to, yeah?
Like the developers are a tough nut to crack because they're very focused on their problems. Can you solve my problem or not? That's the only thing they care about. For example, our support is, we have a developer basically doing support. We have a very technical person that's answering, developer questions. Like we have another customer success person handling, business or like, account related, questions. But we also have the rest of the team on call. So, as soon as there's like a bug or something going on or someone needs to investigate, you need to have like, there's a very technical, like a former developer basically on the other side telling you how to do things and how to try things out. And if that doesn't work, then, you know, you're going to get on a call. You should be able to get on a call with someone who's as technical as you are, who can be there to understand you. I don't think that there should be a company that's selling to developers and not having anyone technical answering technical questions. Like, that's another thing that we hear, like people are very excited. They're like, yes, we usually need to go through three rounds of general support, you know, to reach that tech support basically instantly. Whereas pre-screening. So if a question is technical, it instantly gets marked as a technical question, therefore should be answered by developer. Yeah. Like what's the point of our, you know, customer success person saying, yeah, I'm very sorry that you're experiencing troubles. I'm going to forward this email to our technical team. Like why should we waste time?
It's also removing barriers, isn't it? Like as a developer, if you have to go through a million hoops just to get an answer you want, you might give up, you might look for an alternative that it's easier to...
We'll be looking for an alternative.
Yeah. So just keeping it as easy as possible for developers as well. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like they don't... That's why they're a tough nut to crack.
Yeah.
They don't... they can't stand having a problem that's like just there in their face for too long. Like you either need to fix stuff, you need to teach them how to fix stuff, you need to teach them how to set up stuff. But if you aren't there for them, they're just going to leave to someone who's going to be able to do that for themselves.
Yeah.
Or the second thing, they're going to build the tool internally.
Do it themselves then, since they can't find anything else. And they're quite good at that, aren't they? A lot of developers are self-taught too, so they're very much kind of, I'll just do it myself then.
How difficult can it be?
And nowadays, again, with so many tools, and now there's even, you know, low code, no code, there are so many options out there nowadays that I think companies are competing with a lot of stuff, perhaps.
Yeah, so you're competing with AI and that type of stuff. So like, make sure you're in a company that can be, you know, run over by an AI tool. But yeah, it's just, and it's great. Like I recently built a website in less than an hour and had it hosted and up and running. Because I used the no-code tool, and I previously, yeah, that's another thing. Like I learned how to code on the job. Not like I was kind of interested, but like not code. Like that sounds too hard. But like I can build a website. Okay, I'm like from not knowing a thing to being able to push out the website, and I mean code in terms of like hosting, sort figuring that stuff out. Like for me, Linux was always fun, and like. It took me in the past, like I was struggling, right? I don't know things. So I'm like just kind of trying to figure out how this website builder works and which parts fit where. Where these days, like if you need a simple website real quick, you're just going to go to like a no-code tool and you're going to have like some pre-built things that you can look at, edit as you want, and just push it out and make it look really nice. So there's definitely like, I think the quality is what's going to set us apart in the future. Like you can no longer be like, oh, I don't care. Like, you know, I do this thing in this, you know, I don't want to be very focused. I don't want to continue improving. Like these things are always going to be done this way. No.
Yeah, it's a lot of things, and especially considering how different developers are and the way they are in terms of, you know, innovation as well. It's just, something to keep in mind. So thank you for that. Also wanted to ask you if there's like any mistakes that you have seen people or companies do when they're trying to get to that right audience, find the right people for them.
Not being very critical, not checking in in terms of like, you need to be like in the things, the examples I've seen. Okay. You have a round of investors, and investors want to see nice numbers. So you're going to do whatever is in your power to show them the nice numbers. And that's why like I hate with passion the metric that's called impressions. Like how many times someone has seen, I haven't seen, like I've scrolled, like I was on Twitter, I scrolled real fast, and that still was like an impression of your post, like impressions, and that like big numbers are what people are looking for. I think for us as marketers, in order to be effective, we need to look at the numbers that we are not happy about, such as next steps. Where did people go after visiting some stuff on our website? Where did we want them to go? Where do I want them to go? Like with every single page on your website, you need to have a goal. You need to say, I want these people to either go here or here. If they are like, for example, on some landing pages. If they are on your blog, every blog post, my main goal is I want to get them on the homepage. I want to get them on the main website. Am I doing that? And you need to, those are the hard facts you need to look at. And also, people look for direct conversions from their content. And I think that's the worst metric you may have. People are like, yes, I want to see the money. I want to see this thing, you know, pay off. And I'm like, no, it takes multiple touch points. Mm. When have you ever seen a bigger account convert? After reading one blog post, like it's multiple people are involved in this process. People these days are on mobile phones. They find you on their mobile phone, then they send that link to someone else on Slack. Then they go to the back to the office. They open that Slack link. Poof, that's two people already. And then people are like, yes, we want them to convert unless they're converting. And I'm like, wait, if they convert, it means it's usually a small account, right? Like, why would you look for direct conversions? Like understanding the funnel. I think that's our main job as marketers, is also to explain the founders and the people around us how things work, how user paths, you know, look like, how, like, there's, it's never a straightforward journey. Like, look at, when you are looking into a product, what do? You found out something on their blog, then forgot about it, then maybe read it something else again, then you went to the homepage, then they, you looked at the homepage, then you, you know, dropped off. Maybe later on you got back to look at their docs or pricing, you were kind of talking with someone, but you know, you gave up, there was something else more important at work. You found another blog post from there, and you're like, oh yes, this is this goal I wanted to. So rarely the funnel is perfect. Like,
yeah,
is there just as an example, it's not real. It's our wishful thinking.
It's more back and forth for sure. I mean, even if it's not just products like that, you know, you want to buy something for the kitchen, you want to buy some, at least for me, I spend how many times do I look, should I get this? Oh, let me look at the feature. Oh, let me look at
the basket, but you don't fill out the payment details because,
maybe not think about it a bit more. Yep, absolutely. So if something as simple as even like a household item can be like that, you know, if you're talking about a product for a whole company or something, that, yeah, a lot more people should look at that, a lot more. Yeah, and people drop off, as you were saying. So makes a lot of sense. And
another thing, a lot of marketers aren't aware of how much they are missing by not having the right analytics. Developers block ads, most of them by default. I did some research that says at least the bare minimum is 30% of your audience is invisible. Bare minimum, even more. Like I recently did some, like, was talking to even my friends who aren't in tech, like 70% of the people I talked to were blocking ads in one way or another. If they're blocking ads, they're also blocking Google Analytics, for example. So there are other alternatives that you can find, you can use, that are GDPR friendly as well, where you can look at the actual results of your website. You need to have real numbers. You need to have real targets. Like, I also have some like goals set. So I know that, like, for example, on our blog, we have a banner in the middle of a post. That if it's a Node.js blog post, it takes you to Node.js landing page and that type of stuff. So I have a tool that helps me measure how many people actually clicked that thing. Like, I have real exact numbers. And like, so with those numbers, I can go to someone else, for example, who's in ads, and be like, my content's doing better than your ads and it's a lot cheaper. Let's not chase ads. Because this is working out for us and we can save money and we can reinvest that somewhere else. Like, you need to think like a founder, or like, you need to be that's the thing. You want to optimize things for developers, but you also need to be aware of like what type of market they essentially are, because they're more technical than us and they don't want, they're like always privacy, like they're not gonna just gonna leave email, like another thing, people think like the default story is like you join the company and the founders or like whoever is your manager says, we need leads, sales needs leads. So what do? You make an ebook and you expect developers to leave their email. Let me shatter your idea. There's a tool called Fake Email Generator that I've been using since I started working with developers. I have never, ever used my email for real whenever I was downloading an ebook. It doesn't happen. Yeah. Like, people don't do, like, only maybe if you're solving something that has never been solved before, and maybe you're working in an enterprise company that's only targeting these enterprise people, and I don't know. But like, if you're targeting smaller teams where developers make decisions, no, they will not leave you their email.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with that. I mean, even the people who are not developers, you know, myself included, are always worried about privacy and security. And nowadays, there's so much information out there, you know, your own information out there. So I can't even imagine how a developer who actually understands how everything is used and all that, what tools they have to kind of hide away from all that. So very interesting point and important to talk about. So thank
you. Yeah, I mean, it's like we're trying, we're there, that's another thing. Like, product usually works with sales, and like salespeople are usually like, we don't have enough leads. You know, your job is to bring me leads. Whereas no, your job is to bring you like the right people, but like not everyone has to be a lead. And I think the more and more in like developer tools, there's less need for sales, as long like developer enablement. Like, if your docs are clear, if your website is understandable, you don't need a dedicated sales team. You only need dedicated sales people when you're targeting bigger size companies, and then there's like product owners.
Yeah.
I don't know, security, whoever who needs to someone to talk to and, you know, check stuff off and that type of stuff. But even then, like that person that's doing sales, like there's a new job listing called sales developer. And that's essentially a developer working in sales, because sometimes only developers can sell to other developers. Like, you need to, like, your job is to do sales essentially, but you need to be a developer as well. Like, that's how complex sometimes stuff are. So, it's like, if you focus on doing things in a way that's going to streamline their workflow and like, you know, make it easy for them to test out the tool, they're very hands-on. Like, they have a problem, they want to solve it. They want to see if your tool is solving the problem. Don't ask them for their credit card straight away.
Yeah.
Enable them to use the trial as much as they can. If they're happy with the tool, they're going to use it. They're going to buy it. You don't need a dedicated salesperson to tell them, but if you try us out, if you enter your credit card details, you're getting this amazing thing. Look at this demo. Like, it doesn't work that way, basically.
Yeah, and the more barriers you add, again, it's just easier to quit. Oh, well, I'll just find something else similar. You know, another tool that does this, I can't be bothered to just fill out a form and have some content gated behind something. Yeah, absolutely. Do you have any final thoughts or advice you'd like to leave our listeners with about this topic, or, well, anything else you think it's important?
Well, I'd say like it's a challenging market, but it's a very rewarding market. And it's very exciting and dynamic, and it's never boring. And I think like as long as you are aware that like you're not, you can't do anything yourself, like completely, you always need your colleagues. So like if you are a type of person that likes collaboration a lot, then I think like this is definitely the place for you. And if you are struggling with identifying who your customers are, reach out to people in your team that know these things better than you. Make friends with your team, basically. Understand what the pain points the product is solving. Understand what are the frequent questions people answer on support, so that you know what you shouldn't be saying, or like what you shouldn't be promising, or which type of company you are not a good fit for. Reach out to customer success or sales, on anyone who's, you know, who has a database of all of your users. Ask them to export that. See how many, like, what does your user base look like at that very point in time? Talk to founders, or like try to identify, like, you need to understand what type of company people want to be for and what's the reality. Like, sometimes people are like, yes, we want to have bigger accounts and we want to sell bigger, you know, plans. But the reality is that like they're struggling because something is lacking there. It's much easier to start off in a smaller team and then be there as they grow, because developers, as long as they like the tool, it does the job, it doesn't bother them, it grows as they scale. You're going to be there. That's how you keep a customer. That's how you keep bigger plans, like get smaller customers and watch them grow, basically.
Oh, amazing. Thank you so much for that. It was great speaking to you, and you've got lots of great advice and again, practical examples that I feel like are so important for people to, you know, get inspired by or get ideas to kind of implement in their own company. So thank you again.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And yeah, I hope a lot of people reach out to to you to figure out like how to do things better as marketers. And I really hope that, you know, I'm like dreaming of a place that is going to connect us all. I think like developer marketing can sometimes be a lonely, you feel lonely. Like yeah. There's no one else has these questions or like these problems, and then like you find someone else and you're like, oh, this person knows what I'm going
through. Yeah, exactly. It's small, but I feel like it's still a little bit of a niche, but it is growing, I think, with more people know a bit more about more developers, more they'll have to learn, you know, more marketing towards developers and all that. So hopefully the community will continue to grow, and to speak to you about it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of DevMar Debugged. If you want to hear more from professionals in the developer marketing world, subscribe to our podcast for more expert talks. See you on the next one.